Hey,
we're the few.
You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Come to Foo Bar on December 17th for our 5th annual Christmas Bash and Food Drive to see us, along with Noesis, Forgetting January, The Failures, and our good friends from Minneapolis, Vaudeville.
Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and tickets are only $7.
Be sure to bring canned food or other non-perishable food items for donation to the St. Louis Area Food Bank so we can help those less fortunate have a better holiday season.
All tickets purchased in advance will be entered to win 4 tickets to see Star Wars Rogue One on us.
The winner will be announced at the end of the night.
Also, if you haven't picked up our new record, Sleep Tight When You Wake Up Will Be Gone, grab your physical copy from us on the 17th or download digitally anytime.
Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. Hey, quick reminder, if anybody hasn't checked it out, I put together this playlist on Spotify called the Rock Paper Podcast Favorites. All kinds of local music and guests from the show. About 2 or 3 songs from everybody I could find on there. So head over to Spotify, check it out, find some new great music. Also, want to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight. Check them out over on the hill, gaslightstl.com. And go over there and book yourself a recording session. It's a beautiful studio here in town, attached to a bar. It's a really unique experience. You can come in, you can record, or you can listen to one of your favorite bands recording their record, and just have a lot of fun over there. So again, GaslightSTL.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and get involved. Check out their full listing of upcoming events on the website. Also want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them over there on Washington Avenue, right next to KDHX. Brand new location. They got a lot of great stuff going on. Check it out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, musicrecordshop.com. A lot of great live in-stores on the weekends. On Fridays, all new music happy hour, all new records in-store. And they got a great local selection. You can get in there, check that out. And if you want your own records on the shelf, hit them up about that, see how you can make that happen. And then check it all out. Shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
On this edition of the Rock Paper Podcast, Shane welcomes special guest Kurt Copeland, along with friends Nick Adamson from the Loft Sessions, Trey Montez from the Who's to Blame Podcast, and from Media Outlaws and the Loft Sessions, Matt McElrath. And now, a branch on the family tree of the King of Rock and Roll, celebrating his 147th year in podcasting, the one, the only, Shane Presley!
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Kurt Copeland and friends.
Hello.
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 Oh, you guys are all fired.
Yeah. I'm the only one that followed through.
Yeah. We're back here hanging out. I figured this was be fun to hang out and talk. Kurt, he's got a lot stuff going on. We got yeah, man, it's kind of been a little while in the making, and I'm excited it all worked out today to get to hang out with you, man.
Now I'm trying to recall, when was the first time we met?
I think might have been officially at Gaslight. I think we first really got to talking, and that was one of the Loft Sessions over mm-hmm. there. And
who was performing that day?
I don't know. What?
Huh? I think it was Cabo.
Yeah. No, it was before that.
Was it before Cabo?
Boy, there's been so many great acts. You know, Matt McElrath is here, and obviously Loft Sessions is kind of a mutual connection, you know, of course,
sure.
Like you say. And, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun to be a part of the show and in the spirit of the St. Louis music scene that runs through all of our veins, you know what I mean? Like that's the common thread with all of us. That's how we all know each other, and you know, it's a beautiful thing. It really is, and it doesn't have to be what's going on anywhere else. It's it's what we got going on here, and we love it.
Definitely, I think you know, I'm not. I think it might have been Cluster Pluck.
Yeah,
it could have been the Cluster Pluck episode.
Yeah, that sounds right. It sounds
somewhere
right.
Somewhere around there.
That was a good one.
But yeah, we you know, I've kind of known of you, obviously being a personality in town, and and you know, but yeah, we're getting to talk, meeting you through Loft Sessions and Matt and these guys that you know, obviously help open the door for that. But we got to talking, and I was like, hey man, it'd be fun to do this, and we exchanged numbers, and here it is, man. We're making it work. So
thanks for having me on, man.
But so anyway, people might probably know the name. You've been what, I don't know, a long time now, right? But
I've been working in, or you know, been on the air here in St. Louis, you know, terrestrial radio, as you call it, since July of 2005.
Yeah,
you know, I was on one radio station, and then they fired me, and I had to step back to Minnesota, where I'm originally from, for a minute, and worked at a station up there. But got an offer to come back to St. Louis and work that show in the morning for about 2 years. And then was recently let go, and now, you know, the sky's the limit.
Sure, man, yeah. I and that's, like you're saying, it's just exciting that now, you know, obviously not the way the planned out, but having this time and at your being able to do a lot of the music stuff, you know, that you're very passionate about. I see a lot of your videos, even while you were still on the radio, but you still play music a lot and stuff, and, like, now it's nice that you can kind of focus on that path and see where this is going to take you, and having a lot of fun jamming with these guys.
You know, it was really tough. One of the hardest things, and this is not to make it seem like, you know, a regret, you know, from doing, you know, the morning show, that early morning shift where you have to try to get to bed, you know, 7 is ideal, you know, 8 is, you know, somewhat of a realistic target, 9 most of the time, and 10 o'clock is pretty often too. And then you're getting up at 3:30, you know, to get in there to do this show at 6 a.m. And so the byproduct of that was especially heartbreaking in that it meant that I couldn't go to nearly as many shows. It meant that, you know, if I was going to stay up late for a show, if I was going to stay, it damn well better be, you know, real high up on the list. And, you know, it meant that, well, I'm going to give you an example. It meant that I couldn't go do Chippewa Chapel open mic night with Fred Friction. You know, I mean, here's a guy that, oh man, you know, need I say more? You know, I mean, I love Fred with all my heart, and anyone that, you know, hears this who knows who Fred is knows exactly what I'm talking about, and I'll bet you feels the exact same way. And if you don't know who Fred is, then you need to know who Fred is.
Right.
But I'll tell you, one of the best things that happened after I got fired was in that first week, that first Thursday night, and I remember promising myself, I said, boy, I tell you, when I get fired, you know, whenever that happens, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go see Fred, because I won't have to get up that next morning at 3 a.m. And sure enough, I went to go see him, and it was good to see him.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So is radio, was that always like the goal? I mean, is, you know, you always had an idea of wanting to be in radio as a kid, or?
It started basically with Letterman.
Yeah.
You know, watching him on TV when he was at NBC was pretty thrilling. I thought, man, that looks like fun. And so I did a book report on him when I was in, I don't know, like junior high or something. And it was like, well, he started off in radio. So in my mind, it was like, oh, that's how you get to be on TV. You start off through radio, and then eventually you become David Letterman.
Yeah.
That's exactly the process. But, you know, so there I was, and then I'm sitting in high school one day, and they did the announcements where they tell you what's on the lunch menu that day, or they tell you that such and such is going on after school, sign up for this, whatever. And they said if anyone was interested in a career in radio, that the local radio station in my hometown in southern Minnesota was hiring, and that no experience was necessary. And, I mean, I just thought to myself as I heard this, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know what I mean? Like, I could go get on the radio, like, right away without experience. So I went down there, and lo and behold, you can. And it took to me right away, otherwise I would never would have gotten into it. But it was interesting to me, and I picked it up about as quick as I'd ever picked up anything in my life. You know, it just like a glove that fit perfectly.
Sure.
And settled right in and just learned and learned and learned and climbed the ladder. And that was in high school. And then I went to college for a year and said, hey, to hell with college. I don't like this at all. I'm going to just go full speed ahead in radio. And really, it worked out. You know, that's why I got a lot of gratitude about the whole thing with radio. At this point, you know, if I don't ever work in radio again, you know, I'll walk away with no regrets. Because, you know, I did this, I gave it all I had, and I think I had a tremendous amount of success. You know, it's just got kind of interesting here, you know, kind of towards this time because, you know, I'm just, yeah, it's the corporate radio thing. You know, I don't need to go into it, but you know what I'm talking about. Everyone understands the challenges that they're dealing with and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of that world, but, like, being a Stern Show fan for, I don't know, I think I started listening to Stern in, like, 03, somewhere around there. And even that, I was kind of late into it. But, you know, I've been a fan for now for 13 years or something. And, but, yeah, you listen to stories of his radio start, you know, and him getting fired all the time and getting moved to different markets and everything else. And, like, it just seems like it's almost like part of the, you know, part of the business, part of the protocol, almost, like, where they, a lot of these guys go from job to job in the business and stuff, so. So I don't know.
Right before you got here, I was on the phone with somebody about an opportunity possibly in San Francisco. Now you think about that. I mean, you know, in radio terms, you know, that's market four. That's huge. You know, and so I'm sitting here going like, you know, I could probably be a contender for this job. You know, I've done mornings now, you know. And I'm thinking about it, you know, that's San Francisco. That's a whole other universe out there, man. And I've been. It's cool to visit. I don't know. I can tell you one thing, though, I'm sure of, is I know how much it hurts to leave St. Louis and to not live in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I had to do it in 2014, when I got fired from that first radio station that brought me down here, it was awful. You know, even though I was going back to Minnesota, where I was born and raised, where my best friend lives, where I have family lives, where I had a house that I still owned, you know, it still just broke my heart to leave St. Louis. I just felt like I was losing a piece of my soul.
Right. What is it about? I mean, you know, we have a lot to love here, but what is it that really, you think, captured everything for you?
Well, I mean, one of the first things that comes to mind is, hell, this is where Chuck Berry's from. You know what I'm saying? Like, that means a lot just right there.
I live out in Wentzville, the house I grew up in, we shared a property line with Chuck Berry, so I never met him, but it was always really cool for me to have that sort of connection where I literally lived next door to Chuck Berry and stuff, or at least his property. I'm sure he has multiple homes, but Berry Acres out there.
That's the Berry Park, right?
Yeah,
his big place is out there. You see it in Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, the Chuck Berry movie.
Yeah, he apparently used to, you know, through all kinds of crazy parties out there and stuff. I mean, a lot of the old timers I work with, they'll tell you all kinds of, you know, as they would go to these parties as kids and stuff, and he would invite me on the neighborhood kids to come hang out and stuff. And I don't know. He's pretty full of shit. But the guy, one of my guys I work with, he told me a story about something about seeing like Keith Richards passed out in the yard or something like that, which sounds, you know, likely. It could be a possibility, but like, I don't know. You know, who knows the truth of that? But
I just like to believe that stuff is
true.
Yeah. You know, as long as it's not hurting anyone, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and believe that happened because it just enhances the whole rock and roll experience.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, no, that is just a pretty big thing to, you know, if you're especially a rock and roll fan, to see how much Chuck Berry, you know, still is a part of this. You know, I'm playing Blueberry Hill up until just recently and stuff. And so
I love St. Louis. You know, that's the first thing. Why do I love St. Louis so much? A second thing is, you know, somebody like a Fred Friction, you know, somebody that's just a champion of this St. Louis music scene. And it's not about whether or not we're pumping out people that are selling a million records or making huge names for themselves. It's just about going to some, you know, dive bar or something on Cherokee Street or whatever it is, you know, and folks are hanging out making music or, you know, doing loft sessions, you know, what we do at the Gaslight, you know, which is fantastic. or whether we're jamming here, you know, Matt McElrath's apartment. You know what I'm saying? You know, we love to do. And you know, and that's why it's exciting for me, you know, going forward at this point in my life, to finally have the time to focus on my music passion and to really give it what I feel is like, it feels like music's always been this thing for me. It was like kind of just a hobby, just a hobby, nothing more. Because I had this radio job that I was always primarily focused on, and rightfully so. But now that things are just completely different, it's like, you know what? I think it's about time that I gave music my as much as I possibly can. So leave it all out on the table so that when it's all said and done, if, you know, I'm not trying to be a star, but I just want to write the best possible songs that I could write. I want to touch people like I think any reasonable, you know, musician wants to do. You want to touch somebody's heart or their soul and make them feel good or make them feel the pain that you feel. Maybe, you know, I hate to say it, but I think that's kind of what it is a little bit.
Right. Well, you know, in, you know, you do know what ifs, you know, it's like you keep, you always have that in the back of your mind. If you don't, you know, acknowledge it, then you're going to be wondering, like, you know, I could have been a contender. You know?
Yeah.
Like, but you just, at least you're taking that upon yourself to try that opportunity and see where this thing might go. Even if it's just locally here, but it's still as fun to, you know, try it.
Like, that would be fine to me. Like, I think about what kind of life would I want to live, because that idea of, you know, moving to a San Francisco or some other place to me is... It just doesn't really, you know, I don't want to leave St. Louis.
Sure.
With all due respect to any other place that might be a special place out there, I don't want to leave St. Louis. And I just feel like I'd like to create an existence with or without radio where I can play music or, you know, work a regular kind of job, if you will, you know, to pay the bills and then still stay active in music to satisfy my soul.
Yeah.
And spend time with my friends, you know what I'm saying? Because... it's such a great common bond, and I love my musician friends most, you know.
So I guess we're going to make an official announcement.
Oh yeah,
on this, right? So this will be kind of the debut, I guess, of sorts, at least the name.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting a new.
Wait, we don't have a gig yet.
Yeah. But. We're going to do, you're going to start a new, you have a new project you're putting together, and it's going to be Kirk Copeland and Friends.
Yeah.
And a bunch of familiar faces around. So you said, but you said it's going to be kind of an open thing too, where a bunch of kind of guys coming and going and a little bit and in and out of the lineups.
Yeah, you know, I found that we'd done some gigs before, and it was, you know, it was kind of like, you know, somebody might be here available, but then the next time they may not be available. And I thought, well, what if there was a way to kind of always kind of go forward no matter who was available? And, you know, because sometimes when you work like different gigs, and I think every musician that's listening to this can relate, you run into like these different venues where they have a budget and they have this amount of money that they want to pay for acts that play at their bar, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I kept hearing from somebody, kept telling me, you know, she knew a lot of club owners, and she'd say, you know, they're really around this certain dollar range. And so at which point you get, you know, to kind of that bigger group, it gets harder and harder because you want to pay everybody, you know, like for playing and stuff. But it's hard because the bar doesn't necessarily want to pay that much.
Right.
So, boy, if you can keep it around that, say, that 2 to 3 kind of range, you're in a spot where, you know, you can still make a little scratch yourself, and it's worth your time and it's worth your effort, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, it does get a little bigger. It does, you know, obviously there's not as much money then to go around. But obviously, you know, most of us are playing first and foremost for the passion of music anyway, and money is, you know, just a little bit on the side.
Yeah.
But it's fun to play with these guys, and since we play together all the time and just like get together like friends, jamming kind of thing, you know, eventually I think we all just kind of looked at each other and figured, you know, why don't we just get together and really put a little effort behind this and put ourselves out there? And hell, if radio is going to take a you-know-what on me, then why don't I use the following I've been able to build up by being on the radio to help us book some gigs, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That, so when do you discover this passion for songwriting and stuff?
Well, you know, having a broken heart, you know, definitely.
Sure.
You know, it was, for me, it was a couple things. It was seeing the last waltz, you know, here celebrating its 40th anniversary. It's such a hugely influential thing in my life, because what it did was it absolutely ignited my passion for music, which I think was always kind of there but never nurtured. You know, like when you're into something but nobody else in your family or in your world is going to tell you, help you out with that. So nothing really came of it. Until I saw that movie, I was on my own. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go buy a decent guitar. I'm going to learn to play and have some fun with this. You know. And so that was hugely influential, musically speaking. And
don't you also play guitar? You're a left-handed, right?
Yeah, I'm a lefty guitar player. But then again, because nobody, I had a guitar. My grandma and grandma gave me this simple little acoustic guitar, cheap little thing, and nobody looked at the way I was playing and said, "Well, he's playing it upside down. He's playing it left-handed." While it's still strung right-handed, right? Did you not know this, Dre?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, if you, like, yeah, I'll grab one here.
Sure.
Just give me a second. You know, so it's just, you know, this, I'm holding here, you know, a right-handed guitar. And so I'm holding it like a lefty, right, so that it's pointing to away to my right. I strum with my left hand, I make the chords with my left hand, but the strings are still arranged as they would be for a right-handed person.
Right.
So it's goofy, it's backwards, and it's, again, just because nobody said, you know, you're doing it wrong, kid. Do it like this. And maybe I'd play right-handed, or maybe I'd play proper left-handed, but that's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I saw you... I think it was the Cabo one. Now that you're saying that, I think that was the one where we were having that conversation where they were watching you play guitar a little bit there in the studio and stuff, and like, and then they were like trying to figure it out and like talking about how you're able to kind of do some different things even because you're playing it that way compared to somebody trying to play that chord, you know, standard or however you want the terminology, but you know, it's just. So I guess you have benefits of playing it that way too.
There's some things that Matt and I have discussed this. There's some definite advantages, which are a lot of fun, and then there's some clear and present disadvantages. So there's some forms, you know, some little like tight patterns that you would like. We talk about Chuck Berry, that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's particularly easy to play. And in fact, I think it's easier to play for me as a left-handed person, the freakish way I play,
right,
like with that extra little twist. But, you know, then there's some things that we found that did trade off.
Yeah, there's been a lot of weird chords that he can hit that just seem almost impossible, you know, the traditional righty style.
Yeah.
So.
It's fun, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I guess you're not ambidextrous where you could flip and try to go back the other way?
Certainly am going to play everything in a left-handed form. There was talk and there was a thought of actually picking up a traditionally left-handed mandolin to try to play it that way. But, until I have a job that pays a little better, I'm not buying any new musical instruments. We're going to put the kibosh on that right quick.
I've seen some of your music and some of your original stuff, along with some covers, being that you've done quite a few of these loft sessions with Matt and the guys, and one of those we're talking about was Bad Luck Charm,
yeah,
which we might get some live version here tonight. But I guess it pretty well tells the story throughout the song. I mean. But do you care talking about that one, how you came about that one?
It's a great question, and I'm happy to, because it really is a story kind of song. I mean, it's that classic example of, you know, the ex-girlfriend-inspired kind of tune, you know? And it's not necessarily like, hey, bleep you, you know, like a revenge kind of thing. It's just painting a picture, you know, a collage, if you will, from various ex-girlfriends and the experiences that I had with them in different ways. So, you know, some of the verses are just kind of like setting the tone, but a few of them are very specific, and I'll give you an example. There's a verse in the song where it's, I took her out to the ball game, the pitcher had not allowed a hit. You know she had to say that something to put an immediate end to it. So one night I was at Busch Stadium. Well, I think it was Jaime Garcia. No, Michael Wacha was like 8 1/3, right? So he's two outs away from a no-hitter. And the girl that I was dating at the time, you know, I had gone through that classic, typical conversation that many go through, you know, where it's like, this is what a no-hitter is, and you don't talk about a no-hitter, and you don't text about it, and you don't, you know, it's like, hey, he's got a no-hitter going. You just, hey, I suggest you turn on the game right now and leave it at that. And I explained to her that, like, you can jinx a no-hitter by talking about it, by calling it out by its name. And sure as, you know, I get the text, like, at 8 1/3. She's like, hey, does this guy have a no-hitter going on, question mark? Boop, there was that little bleeder, that little base hit that nobody could catch that just breaks your heart. And I'm like, son of a... You know, and I was like, you just blew his no-hitter, you stupid... So that's what's up, you know, and then, you know, it's just as you go through different relationships, sometimes you just feel kind of unlucky.
Right.
And I've been with a few girls where I just felt like, oh my God, I can't date this girl anymore, or I'm going to wind up dead or arrested or, you know, something worse.
Right.
Well, she's my bad. When I take her out
more bad luck, cause she's my bad luck charm, but I just...
You kind of got the that one, especially, and I saw another, you did a Merle Haggard cover, right?
Oh, I covered Haggard, sure. Hugely influential.
Yeah, it just seems like you kind of have that, a little more of that outlaw country kind of vibe to a lot of your music. Is that something that Kurt Copeland and friends is going to embrace, or is...
Yeah, the songs that, you know, we have often played amongst ourselves is basically the foundation of this whole thing, because it's like, well, hey, these are the songs that we know well.
Yeah.
These are the songs we're familiar with. You know, a song like Bad Luck Charm, you know, it's an original of mine that I feel is polished enough to present publicly, and working on hopefully some other ones here with my free time. But yeah, that good solid core of cover songs that we kind of all know and love. We're not trying to like reinvent the wheel here. You know, when I go out, I love it when a band busts out a song that I like and they do a good job at it. And I just feel like I like cover bands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I like a good cover band, especially when they do songs I like. So I'm trying to be a platform for not only songs that I do write as I try to blossom as a songwriter, but to really honor, you know, the rich pool of inspiration that I pull from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the band first and foremost. I mean, you know, those guys, are you kidding? Yeah. That's tops for me. And Graham Parsons, and, you know, a little more current with Dr. Dog, you know, hugely influential. And then, you know, somebody like Fred Friction, you know, just to write some crazy ass wild stuff, you know, to have fun with, and really brilliant stuff, because that's what you're always going for.
Sure. I was a... I went to Oyster Bar not too long ago, and I saw Has It To Your Booty down there.
Yeah.
Ryan Stewart.
Yeah. And they were doing, you know, they do a lot of dance cover stuff, and but they did a... Express Yourself. I think that's the original title of the original version. But then, like halfway through the song, they go into the NWA rap verse and stuff. And I just, like, that for me was like so cool. Like, to hear somebody doing a live version of, you know, NWA, and it was like, because I never seen anybody doing it. So like, there's something about that too. Like, where you're taking a cover. You know, it, and making it your own, like, you know, where it's something original, you took original spin on it, doing like both versions of it, but I just thought that was a lot of fun to hear that live.
We could do a song, you know, guy, and I'm literally like bringing this up right now, you know, the Gourds version of Gin and Juice.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the kind of song that I think we should maybe take a run at, because, well, hell,
yeah, sure.
I think it's that song, you know, and you know the version I'm talking about.
Yeah. High school, my first car.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Wentzville. I went to Holt my freshman year, and then we opened up the Timberland. Now it's as an annex. So at the time it was just Wentzville annex, and then it became Timberland. We first graduating class. So I had a very weird high school experience, being like essentially a senior for 3 years over there. We got to, you know, make like pick the school name and mascot and colors, and, you know,
I was involved in that.
Yeah,
in
all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it was so it was very different, and but it was fun. I mean, it was kind of, you know, kind of put my stamp on history there and stuff. So, but anyway, my first car was a '88 Crown Vic station wagon.
Nice.
And we had wood panels on the side. And I had like two 12-inch Jensens in the trunk area there. But almost every morning, I had like on my mixtape, I'd roll up to Gord's Gin and Juice, and I just like cranked up out the back window, and the suspension was shot on that car too, because I was like always doing hill jumps, and so I'd roll into the school parking lot, and that thing was just a bouncing, and having, you know, sipping on gin and juice, way back with my mind and my money on my mind. So yeah, man, I know all about that one.
That's a great song. I remember listening to that song, and you know, to somebody that myself, you know, I coming from, you know, southern Minnesota, which isn't exactly a hotbed for hip hop, you know, I just was not exposed. I didn't have cable growing up. I didn't even have MTV, stuff like that, truly, right? And then radio wise, there was no hip hop on the radio, so you know, all of a sudden, I mean, I knew there was a lot of music out there that I was not exposed to. And sure, you got to try to imagine a world before the internet.
Yeah.
Try to imagine a world before the internet where music is still, you know, like when you watch documentaries about, you know, the Rolling Stones, and they're saying like, well, you know, those records were hard to come by, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, I can kind of relate to that a little bit, you know, because I knew ultimately I'd get to everything. I knew that it was like, okay, it's out there, and I'll listen to all the important music that I'm missing out on. But at the time, you know, I knew there was like stuff I'm missing out on. So
sure. When
I finally, you know, got to say, you know, to college and then to Minneapolis, you know, where, and then and obviously along the radio path, which got me into radio and playing hip hop and becoming aware of Snoop Dogg and the whole thing, you know. But then that song just completely opened my mind to the possibilities of how the whole thing can, you can keep turning it around on itself, you know, like it can keep rolling over and the whole thing just cross pollinates and
sure,
and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, there's this group, Steven Seagulls online. I've only seen them online. I know they just rolled through Blueberry Hill a little bit ago, but they're like a bluegrass band. And
just to clarify, Steven Seagulls?
Steve N. Seagulls.
Steve and letter N.
Yeah.
Seagulls.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
not the Kung Fu Master.
No. Yeah.
He's hanging out with Putin.
Slightly disappointed.
Right.
He's hanging out with Putin.
Slightly disappointed.
And shout out to those two. We know they're listening in right now. Hi, guys.
Well, they do these crazy bluegrass kind of, you know, string band and washboard, and like there's one like they have like an old like bell. It's like real super country kind of a thing, and they're just like doing like AC/DC and stuff, and like so it's just, again, it's not hip hop, but it's something where they're taking it. You've heard it one way, you know, thousands of times, and then you hear a totally flipped arrangement on it, and it's like, man, it sounds really good though. Mm-hmm. Too. Like, so
I do love that, because you can also help introduce people to a whole other kind of music.
Sure.
That they might not, you know. And it's so funny, because if you think about your life and you think about those moments or those songs or whatever it was that was a turning point in your life, think about how that thing is possible all the time. And so that's why you should never, you know, that's why it's like, do stuff like that, because you never know when you could be the one person, like that person who decided to go out to a bar that one night when they never go out, and they heard somebody do a song, and it just like was the moment when they decided to go buy an instrument and become a musician. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but I really believe in this stuff, you know?
Sure. Emily Wallace is one of my favorites in town to watch, and she was telling a story on stage the other day. She did Purple Rain from Prince.
And who isn't doing Purple Rain?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, my goodness, you know? I mean, to honor Prince, but, you know.
Sure.
It's just...
Well, to be fair, though, she does it justice.
Well, yeah, no, and I didn't mean to disrespect, but yeah.
But just, I mean, hearing her arrangement, especially doing just a female solo acoustic guitar and just belting it out. But she said she sang it one night, like, with Tin Can years ago or something like that, and she said this guy came up to her just, like, in tears, like, so emotional after that song, and she's like... he came up to her and said, "Oh my God, did you write that song?" And like, you know, like, and you know, who knows what was going on with that guy? But like, it was just funny to hear that somebody might not have been introduced to Prince yet, and like, and learn Prince through Thrimley song and stuff like that. So,
you know, one of my favorites, Dwight Yoakam, just put out a new album, a bluegrass album, right?
I'm not even quite sure. I just like Dwight Yoakam a lot.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, like, hugely influential. Yeah. A huge favorite of mine. And he just put out a cover of it that I found very disappointing.
Yeah.
And I love him, but, you know... You know, thought, you know, and I guess he was working on it before Prince passed away.
Yeah.
And still proceeded with it, you know, but man, I was looking forward to that. It just was a little disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it, like, did well. Like, it was considered a hit and things, but that song that he put out, one of the most recently radio hits for him, of that, whatever, take a look at the back of your hand or whatever it is. I don't know. Just, something about that song, like, it was still a good song, but it was kind of goofy to me, like, you know, just hearing that song. Me and my buddy would always goof on it and stuff, and, like, but yeah, we and guitars and Cadillacs, so, man, you can't go wrong with some of that stuff. Like,
I'll give you a suggestion. If you want to hear a great Dwight Yoakam song that maybe a lot of people haven't heard, his cover of Dave Elvin's Long White Cadillac is fantastic. It's one of my all-time favorite songs, and that is a jam and a half.
Sure. I think you know, that's the thing too, like, you know, kind of you guys, you know, you learning Gin and Juice and stuff like that, but I mean, I think a lot of people also, you know, Dwight or whoever, you know, they have, when they have that opportunity in the spotlight, and they can kind of you know, take a song that they like that maybe not known by everybody, but it allow them to throw it on a record and reintroduce it to a new audience and stuff, and there's something really cool about that. I know, like, or they take him on the road. Like, I know Jason Isbell, he was taking John Moreland on the road just because he's a huge fan of his writing and stuff like that. And, like, and it's just fun to see those guys either do their song as a cover or, you know, something, whatever, because they believe in this. You know, you guys need to listen to this. Like, so it's just, I think that's a really cool opportunity.
I'm going to become a huge star for the singular goal of introducing Fred Friction to a national audience.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah, I don't know. I know, obviously, I know the name, but I don't know. I haven't had the pleasure to meet him yet, so I need to...
Really?
Need to do
oh, that. We're going to hook that up. Yeah, can you imagine?
Put him on the show.
You know, Fred, like, do you know about, like, he used to work on KDHX. He did Fishing with Dynamite. It was a fantastic, you know, was it Murder Ballads for Truck Driver's Wives or something like that, you know? I'm probably screwing it up, but, you know, that kind of thing, you know? He's just so damn creative. Right. It makes you sick. You know what I mean? He's got, like... The dirt underneath his fingernails is creative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he is just one of those people that you almost want to just get down on your knees and thank God that you get to know this guy, because he's special. He's just endlessly influential and inspirational, and I had a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yeah, I saw one of his stickers on the wall the other day at the off Broadway, and. They're pretty great stickers, so I need to meet up with him and get to know him a little better.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you got to have him on the show, because that will be one of, I guarantee right now, it'll be one of your all time favorites.
Sure, I've had you know, saying KDHX, I've had a few from KDHX, Chris Ward and Jason Robinson both do shows over there. They've been on the show and. Been able to hang with Radio Rich Dalton.
Oh, one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, that guy just, I don't know. It was so fun to kind of just pick his brain for an hour and talk music, because he's just a wealth of knowledge.
Shout out to Rich Dalton.
Yeah.
Love that dude. Yeah. Oh, man. That was one of the best things, you know, that came out of working at the radio station, this last one, you know, was the chance to be around... Especially those KSHE folks, you know, like you know, John Hewlett.
Sure.
You know, Learn and Favaz.
Yeah, Learn's also been on the show.
Yeah, she is just a tremendous human being. And I just want to go on record. I'll share this, you know, without getting into other drama. That, you know, the day I was like, okay, you know, I'm getting fired. You know, this is it. She says, you know, what's wrong? You know, she could just tell. And as I stood there and waited for what was ultimately my firing, she and I had a conversation about life and what it's all about and what it all means and what it means to work in radio or to not work in radio and being true to yourself. And I mean, I am just like, I will never forget that conversation, you know.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, she's like, and it was, and then to her credit, she's like, you're not getting fired, you know, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, you know, it was, but I told her and I said, hey, I really value that conversation now on my way out. She's like, why? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's what's up, you know. But she's a sweetheart. And yeah. Rich Dalton, you know, another guy, you know, a tremendous opportunity to work with somebody like that. Very grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I need to hook up with him again. It's been a little while since I've talked to him. At the time, he was on a new adventure as well with going into Roots FM and stuff. And he was also recently fired. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, you know, like I said, it happens. But, yeah, we got some... I've got a couple questions. Try to throw your pictures up online to get people involved. And one of them asked about how do you get started in radio. Because, I mean, obviously, we kind of talked about your start. And you went to, you know, going to college and stuff and then in the radio station. But do you have any advice for somebody looking to try it out?
I hate to be, you know, I'm not trying to be negative Nancy. I'm trying to be positive Polly, and I want to build you up. And you know, Dre will try chime in on this. Radio can be tough.
Very tough. You have to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't believe in yourself, don't do it. You don't need other people to believe in you. You must believe in yourself to do this game.
And the industry, you know, is like a lot of industries. They're going through tough times. You know, it's some stations are well run, a few are well run, most are not, and as a result, they suffer and people suffer and they lose their jobs, and it's unfortunate. So, you know, I just say, you know, if you really have to do this, I mean, if this is just absolutely what you got to do, then you give it all you got and do it.
Right.
But because I love you, I'm telling you. It's, can I speak freely here?
Of course, whatever.
It can be a bit of a kick in the dick, okay? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? As I'm experiencing, you know, at the moment, right. You know, to the point where I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to do, like, you know, terrestrial radio again, you know,
sure.
Because I've kind of had enough of these clowns.
But I kind of think radio makes you believe in yourself, though.
I do believe in myself more, and that's the thing, and it is a very healthy process to be fired and to have to reinvent yourself and to do it again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the part of me that kind of hurts is like, I wanted to serve this great city of St. Louis and this region that I love so much via the God-given talents that I have for radio. You know what I mean? Like, you just, you want to do that thing for many, many years.
Right.
You know, that was, I'm not going to shy away from that. I would have loved nothing more than to have been a successful, long-term, long-serving radio host, mm-hmm. you know, in St. Louis. And ultimately, I just, it's just not meant to be.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to have to do something else.
I've established a small following now through the podcast, but I get a lot of people all the time telling me I should try to take it to radio, and I don't know. I think I would be more proud of myself to establish something on my own and build on my own. Like, you know, obviously radio is still a great thing, but if I can establish a following just on my own, doing it all by myself, that would be more rewarding to me. And I don't know. So I don't, but I know.
It
makes you appreciate it more.
Yeah.
Because it's all you.
Right.
When you're doing it the podcast way versus the radio way, don't get me wrong. I have nothing negative against radio either. But when you're doing it the podcast way, as I'm now getting into it myself, it makes you feel more appreciative of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
It's that earning, that burn again, like you have the music again.
Yeah.
You found it back again. It's making you grind again. That Thursday you woke up,
yeah.
you were attacking the process again. And it's just like that with the podcast. All those tools are coming together, and that's all you. That's all you. And it's just like, wow, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with radio, you have so other many pieces that go with that to help you get to that level.
You don't get to own
right.
as much when you're working
right.
in a radio station.
So if it gets omitted,
yeah.
you can't say what you want to say. You can't attack it the way you want to. But with a podcast, you can do it your way, literally.
Right.
handed it my way.
Pookie can sing. Pookie can sing.
Great to see you, Frank.
That bastard.
I can't think of Frank without thinking of Don Rickles.
Yes,
he tells us a great story about I used to open up a lot for Frank and do all this stuff. And he said he was on a date one night and had a young lady at the table with him. And Frank was across the room having dinner, and he said he went up to him. And he said, "Hey, Frank, it would make my night if you would come over to the table and, say hi, just real something, really impress her." And, he's like, "Oh, yeah, of course, Don, I can do that." And so Don said he went back to his table, and he's sitting there, and they're, having dinner, and Frank comes by, and like, "Hey, how you doing there, Don?" And he's like, "Hey, Frank, not now."
Not now, Frank! Yeah. Can't you see I'm trying to talk to her right now?
Yeah. You got to feel like you're big time. Right.
Rickles, I mean, really, I think about Robin Williams, Don Rickles, George Carlin, sure, Lenny Bruce. These are like the funniest people
legends, man.
I have ever, for me. And Rickles, just rolling on Carson or Letterman, just put a nickel in him and watch him go.
Man.
Hey! I love that guy. He's still with us, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Let's get 2016 over with so we can hang out with these folks as long as we can.
Yeah.
Whoa, Lord, this year. Jesus.
My friend Johnny writes in.
Actual letters from actual listeners. And if they weren't, would I be able to do this?
Yep. Writes in and he says, does he write the celebrity news zingers?
Does he write the celebrity news zingers?
Yeah.
Like the segments?
Yeah. When you were doing your radio stuff, would you write a lot of your own segment stuff that you did, or is that a lot of? You prepare a lot of that for yourself, your own stuff?
Two things I'll tell you about, because of the two celebrity segments that I was known for, or that I was involved in. In St. Louis radio.
Mm-hmm.
So the first was this bit that I used to do at the first station that I used to do afternoons at, and that was a bit called Sebastian the Celebrity Sleuth. Do you know about this?
No, right? I didn't.
Okay. So I got to St. Louis, and the wife of the program director at the time, she said, the program director said, hey, welcome to St. Louis. We're going to talk about the show, the things you're going to do. And I'm going to want you to do, some kind of a celebrity news segment, But is there something, way you could do it that would be, different than just, hey, here's the celebrity news? And I said, I could try to come up with something. And his wife said, as we're having dinner, she says, why not have some type of, character that calls in from, Hollywood with this stuff? And you know how it is when you're having a creative type conversation, it kind of bounces back and forth between a couple people, and one person, led to another, and the next thing we had Sebastian, the celebrity sleuth, who would call in from West Hollywood, California, with all that good celebrity gossip, because, he was totally, validated, because he was actually there in Hollywood, and he could talk about all this stuff that happened, firsthand. So I would do this on the phone, talking to myself in my real voice, and it was the old, it was like one of those old radio bits, kind of an old classic throwback kind of bit where, you're a character and you're talking to yourself. It's something you could only do in radio. Right. You can't do that on TV. And so I did that, and it was fun, and
I had a bit with a NASCAR fan, because when I first started radio, NASCAR is really big. So I had a little Southern boy voice, so I would do like, hey, this is Cooter Jenkins calling from the west of the mountains. Just want to know how the 4-3 is going to do this weekend. Good buddy, I'm out.
And it's fun, because, we were talking about Stern.
Sure.
When he says to him, he says, it's like Imus. He doesn't say the bad things. He says it through a character.
Right.
And so you can kind of do this stuff. And so there was Sebastian the Celebrity Sleuth. And then that carried over with the most recent station that I was at, when my former co-host was doing the quote-unquote celebrity news. And that just comes from what most of your morning shows, your radio morning shows, they're working off of what's called prep services. And prep services are folks who are staying up, like they work in the evening to prepare all this stuff for the TV, those TV morning shows, you know, that yeah. you see, like whether they're local morning shows. Because if, look, we're all working off the same damn headlines.
Sure.
We're all working off the same damn crazy animal stories that happen and the same celebrity headlines and what have you. So everyone's got to put their own spin on it. And so what these prep services do is they just organize all of this stuff in a way that's really workable and tangible for radio people. Like, they're written short and sweet. And so some of these things would be like jokes. So you get jokes about the news of the day, and you'd get jokes about celebrity stuff. So then oftentimes I would either use them as is, throw them out completely because they were completely out of line, or rewrite them in a way that was more St. Louis friendly, or be inspired by them to write an entirely new joke, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was helpful, but you know, it's like having a washing machine. It's like the washing machine's going to do kind of the heavy, you know, the actual, but you still have to, like, you know, gather up the dirty laundry and put it in the washing machine, and when it's done, you got to fold it and put it away. Like, your lazy butt's in this too for a little bit, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking too, that Larry the Cable Guy, like, that all started as him calling into a radio station as that character, and that, you know, because he's really Dan, and you know, he developed this character, and all of a sudden, like, it became such a popular thing. He was, you know, became a regular caller, and then took it into a stand-up act, and then, you know, now he's doing movies and everything else, and, like, you know, obviously he's done pretty well for himself. So yeah. It's too bad your Sebastian character didn't.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me do it when I got to the news station, the recent one. I originally was going to do that because I'm like, well, this is something that I'm known for.
Right.
I own it. It's not like I lost it, you know, like the way Letterman lost some of his, you know, copyrighted kind of things when he went over to CBS. I had full use of, you know, everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was kind of part of what was maybe just a little bit of BS at my last job.
Right.
They just kind of put the kibosh on that. And I'm like, it's a popular bit, man. You know, people like this one. You know, I don't, unless you're getting complaints, which we never did. You know, but hey, whatever, man.
Yeah.
I'm moving on.
Yeah. Well,
I can do it. I can do it in my own podcast. You got any suggestions if I do one?
I mean, I don't know. I think podcasting is the way of the future. I mean, it's the fact that you can do all this stuff. I mean, I can record whenever. It's on demand. You know, everybody's right in your pocket. People can listen all over the world. There's a lot of benefits to it. It's relatively quite inexpensive, even startup. You know, it's like, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing this show, and it's gotten me out meeting all kinds of cool people.
Yeah.
So I don't know that. It's hard to really tell you, like, what you would talk about. You know, I mean, you can.
I have a pretty clear idea. I mean,
yeah.
we've been discussing it, you know, and to be perfectly honest with you, I was looking forward to this when we originally first talked about it, just because of what you do and who you are and what this show is all about. And then all of a sudden, I find myself fired, and I'm like, you know, Matt had been on me for a while now. Let's get the podcast going.
Sure.
Let's get you a TV show going. Let's get you out there, because if this radio thing ever falls through, you know, it's good to have these other things going. So now it is kind of crunch time. It's like, you know, it's time to buckle down and get her done, you know? So we're trying to do that, and we're going to launch the podcast, and Dre Montez has got his off and running, and, you know, baby steps, right?
Yeah, it is. I did the same transition, leaving from radio to podcasting. And myself, it took me getting that kick to get going, because when you know how to do it and know what you want to do and all that, it just takes that shove, get going. And you've been doing a while, and you're very successful at doing it.
Yeah, but I'm like 2.5 years in.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's still, you know, that's still some time and work put into it. And right now I'm just doing, you know, 3 shows a week, but I love it. I mean,
sure.
I'm back in that passion of writing again. And I miss that, because just to put in the hours work of show, it's a lot of content. Mm-hmm. Depends on what type of show you want to do. It's still a lot of research, whether you're doing guests or just talking with people that in that area of your interest or whatnot. But yeah, I love it, though. I really do.
Yeah.
No regrets at all. Love
sure.
It.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, anybody ever says that they express any interest in doing it, I'm always like, just do it. I mean, worst case, you don't ever have to hear it. You know, it's fun. I mean, you could even just record them and stuff. But like, if you're that conscious about it or whatever, but you know, just it's fun to kind of throw them out there and see what happens and stuff. But
I'm not gonna lie, yeah. I want something that's sponsorable. Sure. I want to make some money.
Yeah. Yes,
right. I mean, I got fired from the radio. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to hustle some cash.
Get that money.
Yeah.
You know?
Get money. God. I like listening to myself anyway. So. When I'm at home, I turn off all the lights and I listen to old shows. And tell him, Trey. Tell him.
Good morning, everybody. 7:20 now. Traffic and weather together.
You better tell your sister I'm all right now, okay? Daddy says I'm the best kisser in three counties.
Honey, give Junior my ID. You tell him to go down and get me another case of beer.
Ain't nothing wrong with dating your mama and your sister, boy.
Oh. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah. I say we grab some instruments, man, do some jamming.
For the record, your sticker for this Rock Paper podcast is going on the case in the place of where the former radio station sticker was. Yeah. So I just wanted you to know that means a lot to me. I hope it means at least a little something to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I appreciate being on the show. And this song is an interesting one. It's called Mound. Now, St. Louis is known as the Mound City because of the ancient mounds, you know, such as the Cahokia Mounds and others. But I used to own a house in Mound, Minnesota, which is near Lake Minnetonka on the western side of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And Lake Minnetonka has like a lot of just millionaires, like all around it. And Mound is this little blue-collar kind of town that literally is just surrounded by all this money. But there are not many millionaires, if any, in Mound itself. So I lived in this town, and it was just kind of a little like, it was like antimatter to all these millionaires, right? And that's where I lived for a little while. I owned a house there that I completely was underwater on, you know, so I just dumped it. But it's an interesting town that Mound, M-O-U-N-D, stands for amongst its residents, most of us need drugs. I didn't make that up. That's not me. That just inspired the song that's a little dark. It goes like this. Of us need drugs. Living in a house that's crumbling down, my roommates are mice and bugs. Some folks dream of getting out of here, but the road is crooked and the fog won't clear. Been working that convenience store for 15 years, but not a bit anymore. Surrounded by water and millionaires, living their lives without a care. Surrounded by mansions and millionaires, life seems so unfair. Surrounded
Living in a house that's crumbling down. My roommates are mice and bugs. Don't do drugs, kids!
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.